Poker Stories is an audio series that features casual interviews with some of the game's best players and personalities. Each episode highlights a well-known figure in the poker world and dives deep into their favorite tales, both on and off the felt.
Hello and welcome to Poker Stories, a podcast brought to you by Card Player, the Poker Authority, and hosted by me, Julio Rodriguez. This week's guest is Kelly Menken. Kelly has only been around for the last 5 years or so, but she's already established herself on the tournament circuit despite the fact that she was working a full-time job at the same time. She finished second in the Arizona State Poker Championship back in 2013 for $151,000, and in 2015, she made her first World Poker Tour final table, banking $263,000 at the Lucky Hearts Poker Open. Later that year, she was crowned the last woman standing in the WSOP main event, taking home $211,000 for 29th place. And this summer, she repeated the feat of being the last woman in the tournament and added another $156,000 to her winnings. In October, she made another WPT final table, this time picking up $147,000 at the Best Bet Bounty Scramble. Most recently, she was named PokerGo's Player of the Month, appearing on Poker After Dark and Friday Night Poker, where she played a $23,000 pot with 7 deuce against Justin Young. But honestly, poker is just a part of what makes Kelly so interesting. She is very smart and was on her way to becoming a surgeon, but she decided to take the LSAT for fun and wound up getting into law school instead. After passing the bar, she worked as a medical malpractice attorney at a law firm in Arizona until this year before deciding to take a break. Anyway, that's enough intro. Here's my conversation with Kelly Menken.
I'm here with Kelly Menken. Kelly, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, 2 days in a row at Poker After Dark. How did that go for you?
Well, it didn't go great because I didn't cash, but the experience was great. It's nice to be able to play on PokerGo with, you know, the likes of Chris Mormon and Jennifer Tilly. It was just an exciting experience. So even though it wasn't profitable for me, I had a good time.
2 days of 10K sit and goes. Who was there? Ellie Lezer was also there. A couple of online qualifiers. Also been playing at some other games, the Friday night cash game, right?
Yeah,
that Friday was night fun. Poker. So you were named, what was it, the PokerGo Player of the Month? Or
yeah.
How does that work?
I'm not sure.
Do you get a plaque or a trophy? Or
They had a poll, and I guess that I was the fan favorite, so I'll take it.
There you go. Let's go back to the beginning. Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tell me about Milwaukee.
Wow, you're really taking it back.
All the way to the beginning. Actually, that's not even where you were born, is it? That's where...
I grew up in Milwaukee, though. I was born in Waukesha.
Yeah.
Just a Midwest, you know, family, and...
Ronnie and Donnie
are my brothers, yeah.
What was life like as a little Minkin?
A little Minkin, wow. We were rowdy.
Okay.
Just into trouble. We played a lot in the woods, built forts.
Were you the youngest?
No, I'm the middle child.
The middle, okay. So you had to, like, separate the boys sometimes, or...
Oh, no, I stayed out of it.
Yeah.
I let them do their thing.
Mm-hmm. But you were a sporty person growing up, right?
Yeah, I played sports. I was kind of a tomboy, but nothing really crazy that I did. Just
a lot of things.
Yeah, just a lot of things. I played basketball, I ran track, I played softball.
We got volleyball, we got water skiing. What was the thing? You were looking for something to excel at? You're jumping from thing to thing?
I like being competitive, so any area that I can compete with my peers, I'm into. I was the sixth grade spelling bee champ.
Do you remember the winning word?
I don't remember the winning word, but I remember one of them was smorgasbord, and I had studied that word, so I was glad I got asked that.
S-M-O-R-G-A-S-A-B-O-R-D?
Close. You added one letter, but yeah, you're close.
Too many asses, probably.
Too many asses. Never too many asses. Never.
All right, so you're winning spelling bees, playing all the sports, and then you move to Phoenix. What was that about?
So actually what happened was my dad liked to golf when I was younger. He still likes to golf.
And Milwaukee wasn't cutting it for him?
He really liked to golf, and he went to Arizona on a golfing trip and was like, we're moving here.
Yeah, year-round golf is awesome.
Yeah, so that's what got us to Arizona. And I got acclimated relatively well.
Is he good?
I don't know. I don't know what a birdie is. I don't know what a bogey is or an eagle.
It just seems weird to move your entire family across the country to play golf if you'd be if you're terrible at it. You know what I mean? Like, if he's like a 20 handicap and he did this,
you know, you would think people would use that logic, but just like in poker, I think when you love the game, you're willing to do it even if you're
mind,
not the best.
He's a scratch golfer.
Maybe. I don't know what that means.
Isn't a pro, but it's very good. You're not going to make money on it.
Yeah, let's say that. Awesome. My dad's a scratch golfer. He's really good.
You're beating anyone off the street, just not Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth.
Okay, fair.
There you go. So that's what I'm doing for your dad there.
All right,
so you're growing up in Phoenix, and you're a smarty, right? You're dual majoring at U of A.
Yeah, I always wanted to be a surgeon growing up, and...
That's not something people say. People say like, oh, I want to be a doctor. And then they never really like zero in because they never get any closer.
Well,
you
were
like, no, I want to be like a surgeon.
Yeah, I was very specific in my goals. And I did what I needed to do to get to that point. They didn't have a pre-med major at U of A at the time, so I chose something that I knew would be challenging as well as meet all the criteria for medical school.
Yeah.
but at the same time,
You're not going to say what it was?
Hmm?
You're not going to say what you did?
Because
it sounds impressive as hell when you say it out loud.
I studied really hard. And
dual majors in molecular and cellular biology, right?
It's actually one major, but yes, it's molecular and cellular biology.
There's just two things in it. There you go.
Yeah, and it was very rigorous to the point where I didn't want to take the MCAT, and I didn't.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little bit of a procrastinator. So I decided, well, let's just go to law school for fun for a year.
Yeah. Well, you still have to take the LSAT. I mean, you've been studying biology this whole time. I'm assuming you can't just cold take the LSAT and get into law school. That'd be crazy, right? I mean,
yeah, that's crazy, but that's kind of what I did.
Yeah.
I took a practice LSAT at U of A for fun because I heard it was something like an IQ test and went in blind and scored high enough to be able to get into law school then. Yeah. So I just took the LSAT and went, and then realized that law school wasn't that hard. So I figured I'll just finish this.
Yeah, I mean, while I'm here, I might as well get
the degree. Well, there's fluidity in law school, right? Like, it's all about the best argument you can create.
Mm-hmm.
And in science, there is no fluidity.
Rigid.
Either you know the information and you know how to apply it accurately, or you don't. And the scientific method of thinking is a lot different than what you're taught in law school. So I felt like I had a leg up on everyone else, that most of the people that were in law school don't have a science background.
Yeah.
So I felt like I had an extra layer of my thought processes that helped me create arguments that catapulted me to like above average in my class.
Yeah.
But
the idea was to go into law, but with a medical focus.
Yeah. So when I went to law school, I knew I wanted to work in health or the medical arena.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't exactly sure what area because I didn't know anything about lawyers or law school. I didn't know if you, like, I really went to law school blind, like not knowing what was going to happen. But I was fortunate enough to be able to find a medical malpractice firm that was, both of the partners in that firm were women, that I clerked with after my first year of law school and then ended up just staying in that field.
Yeah, so that worked out perfectly because you had a background I'm sure that most people didn't. I mean, what is the average law school student study in undergrad?
Political science or criminal justice.
Yeah, exactly.
Or history, sometimes philosophy.
You could say you were the green M&M in that.
I was the green M&M, yeah. I was. I definitely was.
I'll just leave that one for insiders, for real fans.
Right, right.
All right, so all this time, you're, you know, excelling at school, not partying. I remember you said you were very studious at the beginning, right?
I've always been like that. I've never been a big partier. I remember my one and only frat party I went to in undergrad. I was the designated driver for my girlfriends, and I instantly walked in and was like, I can't do it. There were like people throwing up everywhere, and it was like, what is that movie, Animal earlier. House?
Yes, something like very that. Animal House.
Yeah. That's not my style. Never been.
Even though the U of A is known for that.
Oh, U of A is known to be a party school. I purposely like didn't live on campus. I got my own apartment.
My buddy Sean Patrick Green used to work for Card Player. Shout out to Sean Patrick Green. He went to U of A and was also not a partier. So
what did he major in?
Journalism, I believe. No, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Not what he's doing now, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of partying going on. So I guess it depends on what your priorities are.
And yours was to kick ass at school, become a surgeon, scratch that, lawyer. And all while doing this, you were just, you know, casually dipping your toe into the poker world, right? This was an ex-boyfriend who dragged you to the casino?
No, actually. My brother lived in L.A. at the time. Mm-hmm. And when I'd visit him and my dad, he would always want to do something fun. And I don't, like I said, I don't go out. I don't go to bars. I don't party. But the one mutual thing that we shared was being in competitive gaming area, somewhere where we can compete. And he had been getting into poker, and so he invited me to the casino. I knew how to play, but I had never gone, like, to a casino to play for real money.
Well, how did you know the rules already? Were you playing in home games?
Yeah, like, we played. We would have little, like, home game tournament things with, like, our neighbors mm-hmm. for $20.
Yeah.
And I knew how to play cards from growing up and, like, playing with my grandmother or playing with my family or, you know, I knew, like, the basics of the game. But once I went to the casino and saw that I had a natural ability to read people and make, like, decisions in the moment, that made me inclined to do well in the game. That made me more inclined to play.
Does anything stand out from that first session where you're just like, oh, okay, I might be pretty good at this?
Well, I bought into like a 1-2 game with $200 and like cash out with $2,000 after like an hour and a half. So my brother actually
hour and a half?
Yeah, I was only there for a little while, and my brother has this picture of me with like two big racks of chips, and I don't know, I kind of got hooked, I guess, after that.
Yeah, that would do it. That's a crazy game to be in.
Yeah, it was. Commerce is crazy though. Like, it was at Commerce. I remember going there and like sitting in the little games and just being in awe of the walks of life.
Yeah.
Playing poker together.
Yeah, it's a real melting pot, the most of the LA casinos.
Yeah, they're special.
So what was the goal with poker at first? Just something to do with the family, and then I'm winning money and I might as well make this a profitable hobby?
Yeah, I don't think I went into poker with like a game plan. You know, I wasn't a poker fan prior. I didn't know who anyone was or
You how, completely missed the boom.
I completely missed the boom.
Yeah. No, like, idea who Moneymaker was, never saw a World Poker Tour episode.
Never. Crazy. I didn't know who those people I had heard of like Antonio Sfondiari and mm-hmm. Daniel Negreanu, but I didn't follow poker. I never watched poker on TV or anything like that. So what drew me to the game was just the competitive aspect of it and being able to just beat random people off the street mm-hmm. in a game that I would never, like, have the opportunity to do something like that. Like, I'm not going to be going and playing pickup basketball and, like, schooling people. It just isn't, you know, in the cards for me. So that is what originally drew me to the game. And then the fact that I knew I was better than the people I was playing with, or I had the potential to be, made me motivated to get better.
Yeah. So you're playing cash games. You're moving up in stakes. What's going on? Are you keeping detailed records? You treating it like a business? You studying videos?
None of that. I was playing 3-6 limit with $60 for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, slowly I went from 3-6 to 4-8, mm-hmm. and then from 4-8 to 1-2, and then from 1-2 to 2-5.
Yeah.
And then when I was playing 2-5 is when I started playing in tournaments here and there. and that worked out well for me.
Yeah. So what that was that first tournament you played in, the one, the Arizona State Poker Championship?
It wasn't the first tournament I had played, but it was one of the first serious tournaments I mm-hmm. had played. I had played, like, you know, the $115 nightlies at the local casino and stuff like that, but never, like, a serious tournament.
Or, like, a series main event or something like that.
Right. And so when I went to play, I actually wasn't going to play that tournament, but my dad really wanted to watch me play poker. He knew that I was playing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had always asked me if he could come to the casino and, like, sit behind me while I was playing cash. And I was like, no, that's weird, Pop. Like, I'm not, we're not doing that. So we kind of found this middle ground where, you know, I could be in a tournament and he could kind of be on the sidelines and watch. And so I agreed. And, you know, he, from the day one, 9 a.m., first hand dealt, he was there.
Oh, my God.
Until I got second for $150,000 with Phil Hellmuth emceeing.
Yeah.
It was, like, a really cool experience for my dad. So it was cool to have him witness that.
You get heads up with Joe Keuther and Keuther, I
yeah.
believe
he Keuther, pronounces yeah.
it. And 150 grand. That's, I mean, you're obviously, were you working at the law firm at the time?
No, I was actually in law school still.
All right. So this was money.
It was a lot of money for yeah. me. And going into the final table, I just had zero experience. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know what big blinds were, yeah. nothing like that.
Did you know who Phil Hellmuth was?
I knew who Phil Hellmuth was, yes, but I didn't know who Joe Keuther was or anyone.
Yeah.
You know, so going into that, I just was like, whatever, I'm happy with whatever result I get. And then Joe and one other person, Dan Herleman, who's a local in Arizona, ended up doing all the dirty work, and I look up, and then we're three-handed.
Yeah.
And then he busts Herleman with ace-king aces, like, in this ridiculously cooler spot. And then I just look up, and I'm heads up against, like, one of the best tournament players in the world. Like, it was surreal.
Were there nerves, or were you just too new to be nervous?
I was too new to be nervous. Yeah. Like, it didn't even register that I was in such a ridiculous spot. And the fact that I played really, really well, held heads up, and almost, you know, I had like a 6-1 chip deficit,
mm-hmm.
And ended up getting to a point where I would have had chip lead had I not been 6-outed on the river against Joe. So it was cool. And it gave me a drive, obviously, to pursue tournaments
yeah.
more.
And that's got to be awesome. Your dad saw every hand.
He saw every hand. He brought me lunch. He, you know, woke up early and was rooting me on and cheering me on.
Have you tried to rekindle that good luck energy? Have him around during the series at all?
Oh, yeah. He's always around. He's always trying to be at the, you know, every final table I make. The final table I made in Jacksonville, he flew out for that. So that was cool that, you know, he still wants to be a part of it.
Yeah. So let's talk about kind of your breakout year when people started paying attention to you on TV a little bit there. 2015, make it the furthest in the World Series main event. You get attention for being the last woman standing. I remember you said you were, even though, like, everyone was clapping and, like, supporting you as you busted, you were still really beating yourself up over it.
That was by far the hardest situation I've ever been in poker. I don't think that I could conceptualize what happened in the moment. Like, mm-hmm. I was so shocked to be eliminated at that time, because in my mind, like, it wasn't even an option.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when they wanted an interview, I just couldn't, I couldn't physically talk.
Yeah.
I was like on the verge of tears, and, you know, I usually take beats in poker really well, but that one was really hard for me.
You remember the details?
Well, it was a blind versus blind situation. Well, no, it wasn't blind versus blind. The button limped, which creates like such an interesting dynamic in this hand. Because had he not, he had ace six off, and had he not limped that hand, who knows what would have happened, right?
Was he just a big stack who was very splashy, or?
I'm not going to go into details on why I think that he limped, but I think that he played that hand differently because I was in the big blind.
God.
And so when the small blind completed, I just checked. I had 10-4 off. I, you know, checked back. And then the flop was 10-10-7, two hearts. Okay. And then I ended up overplaying my hand and busting 29th in the tournament. And I was really devastated.
What did the really small blind devastated. Have?
He had queen 10, and yeah. He turned a queen.
See, I would just chalk that up to, I literally didn't put a chip into this pot, and then I, through no fault of my own flop trips, what am I going to do? And then shake it off in a second, you know?
So like, yeah, I mean, I don't, it doesn't but bother for you, me now.
In, for you, like, being there, you know, in your first time, you know, still going, oh, man, like, you had intentions to win it.
Well, and you have to remember how many people up to this point were like, you have to win the tournament. Like, you're going to be so good for poker. Like, just make the FT. Like,
yeah.
And I believed in myself. So I never doubted that I wouldn't.
Yeah.
It never crossed my mind that I wouldn't do it.
And you were just coming off of the final table in Jacksonville, right? Oh, I'm sorry, the Lucky Hearts Poker Open WPT.
Yeah, so 2015 right. was a crazy year. Like, I went to LAPC. I won my first live tournament for, like, 55K.
Yeah.
Then I just went to Florida and got third for 260K. This is in a month time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any tournament experience. Like, I was just showing up and just killing it.
Were you doing something dramatically different? I mean, just playing a cash game style or that worked out for you?
I just, you know, I'm confident in my abilities. And I feel like that carries a long way.
Mm-hmm.
In poker, because there's fear involved in making decisions in high pressure moments that I don't really, at the time, I didn't struggle with because I hadn't put in 3 or 4 years of dedication and work and grinded and, you know, waited for this moment. I just showed up and the moment just arrived.
Right.
And it arrived again and again. So I never got to the point where I was like hungry or I needed like, I had fear of failure, or fear of losing.
Right. It's those spots where you haven't had a deep run in 6 months and now all of a sudden there's two tables left and you're like, oh, I need this to be the score. This has got to be the one. And then it doesn't happen. You're just like, ugh!
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously, now that I have more experience, I've experienced those situations where I get nervous, where I'm like, I really, you know, would love to win here, or I messed up and I, like, beat myself over a decision, but not like most of poker players. And in that aspect, I'm very fortunate.
All right, so this whole time, you're on this sick run of live tournaments. You're also working a job in Arizona.
Yeah, this is the sickest part of this story, is that I was working full-time as an attorney.
Yeah.
It was my first year, like, as a full-time attorney.
That's a lot on your plate.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I would literally have leave work Friday early, fly to a tournament stop, fly back Monday morning at 6 a.m. with my clothes for work packed with me and go straight to the office from the airport. Like, I wasn't messing around.
It was like you had a weekend job playing poker.
I was a hustler. Let's just say that. I was hustling really hard in 2015.
So, like, you're on the plane, you're studying court documents, you're calling clients on the phone. How often do you have to even go to court?
Well, I was new in the attorney world. So I didn't go to court very often. I did a lot of motion writing, a lot of research, a lot
groundwork.
Yeah, a lot of groundwork. You got to put in your hours for, you know, you have to put in your hours.
And but you still loved it, right?
I loved it. Yeah. I loved learning. I loved every aspect of it.
Can you tell me about a real cool case you worked on?
Well, the most interesting case I had was we had a few personal injury cases.
Okay.
And I was always thrown those because they were like really small. There was a
like turning, slip and falls or work
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, like slip and falls or car accidents, stuff like that. And so I was given like the BS work, so to speak.
Someone's got whiplash.
Right. And so we had one where this woman who was a stripper was staying at a Motel 8 and she unplugged a lamp and there was faulty wiring. So she got really badly electrocuted and burned. And she had some nerve damage in her hand. So I worked with her and that was interesting to have her come to the office high or with a client or something like that. But it was interesting to work with like all walks of life. Like it
hey,
isn't
strippers
poker.
Need legal representation
they
too.
They absolutely do. But I will tell you guys, they're not the best clients because they're not very responsible.
Because of what they wear to court?
No, because as a client, you have to have, there's an obligation. Mm-hmm. When you file a lawsuit, there are certain things you have to do, especially with personal injury. You know, she has to see doctors and she has to give me permission to get the, you know, medical records. And
right. An expert needs to document her injuries.
So. Yeah, so she just, you know, we ended up dropping her, but hope she got some money out of that somehow.
So you're doing that, you're working at the same time. When did the decision come to focus on poker full-time? Because I remember the initial thought was you were going to be Superwoman and do both forever, which is insane.
So that's still kind of the plan. I left my job with Kent and Whittakin early this year and decided to focus on poker as well as just take some time for myself. Mm. I spent, you know, my entire life in school and then from school directly to working and then from working and then including poker. Like, I never had a chance to just smell the roses.
Yeah.
So I decided to take, you know, some of this year off and I figured I'm going to go super hard this summer, play a lot of events, and then based on how I feel playing poker full-time then, I'll decide what I want to do after the summer. So the first half of the year, I spent a lot of time traveling, non-poker related.
What did you get to see? Anything interesting?
I went to Colombia. I saw Panama. I went to Dominican Republic.
Were these like bucket list places or?
I was just going. Mm-hmm. I signed up for this. There's a website called Scott's Cheap Flights, and they email you just last minute or like fluke airfares that are cheap.
Yeah.
So I just kind of followed that because I wasn't working, and anytime like a cool opportunity would present itself, I'd just book it and
You're flexible, just jump
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I'd just book it and go. And so I spent a lot of
time. Did you have like a go bag or something? Or
kind of. I mean, I got to the point where I was really good at packing efficiently.
Yeah.
So yeah, kind of, sort of. And I just went for it. And I noticed that I was really happy enjoying the freedom of doing what I want when I want. And so that, you know, when I started playing over the summer, I was like, I can do this. And so I knew, even though I was up to like kind of a rocky start this summer and I didn't have a lot of results, I knew that I was going to finish strong. Like, there wasn't a doubt in my mind. So when I went deep in the main, that was pretty sick.
Yeah, the second time you were the last woman standing in the main event. Do you still care about that title at all, or is it kind of annoying?
No, of course I care about it. Yeah. I think it's any achievement is an achievement worth noting.
You got to figure there's, what, between 300 and 500 women in the main event every year. So it's like you won that mini tournament twice, you know, while defeating this entire gigantic field of people.
I mean, I don't know if I'd say I think about it like that. I think about it as a way to show that women can be successful in something that women aren't typically seen doing.
Yeah. What also helps that it's the same women over and over, because you prove that it's a game of skill and there's some consistency there. You've done it twice. Maria, I think, has done it twice as well. So, and there's been a couple times where you were close to doing it, right? Wasn't there another time where you went sort of deep and you're in the final five or something? Maybe thinking of another tournament.
No, yeah, it could have been in another tournament, but really it's just a matter of motivating and inspiring others to accomplish whatever they want to set their mind to do.
Yeah.
And so if I can help be a, you know, beacon for other women to play poker or to pursue law or to pursue, you know, being a businesswoman.
Or just to
whatever
do two things at once.
Yeah, that you can take on as much as you're willing to handle. And that just because you pick a certain path to go doesn't mean you have to stay in that path forever. You can always adjust based on how you feel, your circumstances, your surroundings.
Do women come up to you at the series at all and say, hey, you know, I'm playing because I saw you on TV or whatever? Like, have you ever gotten that?
Yeah, absolutely. I get, you know, the support from females is overwhelming, and it makes me have a stronger drive to continue what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, shout out to all the women that approach me or thank me or write me on Twitter or Instagram. Like, I read every message, and I want to continue to do that.
So, obviously, good run this summer. Finished 50th for $156,000, and then most recently third in the WPT Best Bet Bounty Scramble for another $146,000. So nice little back half of the year you're putting together.
Yeah, it's, you know, life's good. I have no complaints. Mm-hmm. I almost feel guilty that I'm so happy right now, and I have a lot of things that are going
Why
my
would
way.
You feel guilty about being happy?
Because it's so much. I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky that I feel like I should, like, turn my smile down a little bit. Mm. So it's, I feel like, you know, I don't want to rub it in other people's faces. I want people to see me and be inspired and motivated.
Yeah, I don't think people see a luck box when they see it. I think they see someone who worked their ass off, though.
But both. I think that there's some special quote, like, success is when preparation and luck meet, or something like that. But
luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Not, something like that. But, you know, that's so true. You have to be lucky. You have to be in the right spot at the right time. And you have to work hard. So when that opportunity presents itself, you're ready. You're ready to take it on. And I've worked my entire life to be ready to take what – I didn't know it was poker, and I didn't know it was law. But – I had the skills, so when that opportunity presented itself, I was ready.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, we have some rapid-fire questions
if
you're
ready to do it.
Let's do it. Ready to go?
We're ready. This
is perfect timing. All right. The best swap or piece you've ever had of anybody?
I will say that I had a piece of David Baker in the 50K Poker Players Championship when he got third. And the fact that I even had a piece of him in a tournament that big is absurd. But I luck boxed my way into that. And shout out to ODB.
Yeah, David's a good horse. He's got a few bracelets.
Oh, it was real nice. It was real nice.
I'll have to have David on this podcast. Let's see here. The biggest pot you've ever won or lost, your choice.
Well, that's a good one. I think the biggest pot I ever won was at Commerce playing 1020.
Okay.
It was against Danny Wong, who I love and respect and admire. I think he's an incredible poker player.
Shout out to Danny Wong.
Shout out to you. And at the time,
he's having himself a good year too, I believe.
Yeah. And he's kind of, you know, navigated his way into tournaments as well. And he's kind of like a sleeper. Not a lot of people know who he is. So sorry for blowing your spot up, bud. He was very intimidating at the time. I hadn't been playing high stakes like that long.
How big is this 10-20 game playing?
Like, I mean, it's 10-20. That's big for me.
That's big for
anybody. Yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. I had maybe between 7,000 and 10,000 in front of me.
Yeah.
And it was a multi-way pot. And I flopped like top set, which was the nuts. But I like he was betting into me, and I just was so nervous. I kept like looking at the board, trying to figure out like, is there another hand that beats me? and that pot was like 25,000, I think.
So what happened in the hand?
He just kept betting, and then on the turn, he let out, and I shoved, and he snap called me. And I was like, do I still have the nuts? I'm so confused.
Like, you're like looking for like some secret straight.
Yeah, like I had jacks. I had top set. I think it was like a 4-bet pot pre.
And what was it? A set over set or a 2-pair?
He didn't show. So I still don't know what he had. Danny, I want to know what you had that hand. So if you remember,
yeah,
hit me up.
If he listens to this podcast, we'll know when he texts you
the answer. Too big time to listen. So let's go to the next
question. I have a lot of big time listeners.
Really? Okay, good.
Yeah. Ever since Doyle came on the podcast.
Nice.
Crushing it. Let's go to, well, we brought up Danny, but who's the best player that we've never heard of? Us in the media, we only look at like the same 8 people over and over and over again. So who's not getting the respect they deserve?
That's a really good question. There's one player who I haven't seen in a while that stuck out in my mind significantly. His name was Kakwan Lau.
Okay.
And I played in the 2015 main event with him, and he was just sick. I don't know what he was doing, but, like, I was just in awe of him, and I remember thinking, I want to play like him.
What was he doing that was so – was he just picking people off?
Being hyper-aggressive, and then when he was getting people to play back against him, he just had it.
Yeah.
It was just, like, such a beautiful thing to watch. He was just, like – taking people's souls and like ripping them out like in real time.
I've covered a lot of live tournaments, and I've witnessed people who have been in that weird zone where like they're just bobbing and weaving at the exact right time, and they're always getting called with the nuts, and they're always getting folds when they have nothing, and it does happen a lot. I mean, I'm sure you've felt that in that zone before.
Oh, for sure. It's like it's a cool thing to witness someone who's ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to be in that spot and just maximize all profit.
Yeah.
And then recently I like Ping Lu. I played with him in Jacksonville. He's kind of well known, but not that many. He's not on that many people's radar. But I enjoy his style of play a lot.
Shout out to Ping. All right. We talked about your job as a lawyer. What was the worst job you had before poker?
Okay, so in high school, I worked at Abercrombie & Fitch. It was miserable. I got paid $5.25 an hour.
My wife worked at Abercrombie & Fitch, too. No, it was Hollister. Wait, no. The same thing. Never mind.
Whatever it was. And then I got fired because they accused me of stealing or being a lookout for a girl who was stealing.
Oh.
And they fired me.
How accurate was their accusation?
It was absolute. I would never steal.
It was baseless.
I would never steal.
Not a woman who's considering a career in law, for sure.
I wasn't at the time. I had no idea. I thought I would be a maxillofacial surgeon working with people that have birth defects.
Fixing cleft palates and stuff like
that?
Yeah. Well, there's still time.
If I win another tournament,
you still have the rest of
your 30s. Watch me.
Oh, wait. So you're working the job. What was so bad? What's so bad about it? The folding, the constant folding?
It's a lot of work for not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to constantly spray the perfume on all the clothes, and that really bothered me.
It stinks in there.
It's because the employees, before they open up shop, spray the perfume around.
And like, you always have that jerk of a customer who comes in, and he's rifling through all the T-shirts, right? And they're all getting all wrinkly, unstacked, and he's moving them around, and then doesn't buy a single thing, and then you got to fix it 10 seconds later.
It was a lot of work. The worst part was the dressing rooms. Yikes.
Horror stories, huh?
Yikes. It's just work that I don't like folding and putting away my own clothes. So, what makes you think I want to put away some 14-year-old girls?
Was that the only other job you had, or did you have?
So in college, I worked at the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay.
And I worked with kids that were bad.
That sounds more fun, though.
It was a lot of fun. I did the art room, and I worked in the gym occasionally.
Oh, you're Miss Kelly.
Yeah, Miss Kelly. They loved me. We had fun.
All right. If not for poker, what would you be doing? This is a, I mean, you're a girl with options, so. Wow. Let's say poker is illegal tomorrow. You can't do anything regarding poker again. Where do you submit your resume?
Well, I'd probably just go back to being a lawyer.
Yeah.
I still have plans to do that, but on my own terms, and, you know, hopefully I can self-fund opening my own law firm, which is the big goal.
Yeah. What about opening, like, a dot-com law firm for poker players or something like that? Represent some of our finer people in this industry.
You know, that's a great idea, but not something I would want to do.
Oh, okay. If you do go through with it, I will take 10% for the idea.
I think that law is something that you have to pursue in the areas that you're passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you are going to be miserable.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, like, I could never
It's a ringing endorsement for a career in law.
Yeah, can you guys tell I'm really adamant about being this whole attorney thing? But yeah, you have to love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to like what you do. And if you don't, I just don't have interest in doing something that, even though it sounds right and it would be profitable, if I'm not enjoying it, then I don't want to do it.
No, thank you. All right, you've been all over the world for poker. What is your favorite tournament destination?
I say this every time I'm asked this question, and it still stands.
Is this a common question?
that I absolutely love going to Hard Rock in Fort Lauderdale. It's my favorite tournament stop. I love Tony. He's so great. And I just enjoy I enjoy the structure. I enjoy the ease of the casino and the hotel. There's a lot of my friends are in Florida.
You were just down there, right?
Yeah.
How's the guitar looking? Is it almost done?
The guitar is looking nice. I need a room there. Tony, hook it up.
Yeah, I grew up 2 minutes from there. But obviously, they didn't have that when I was...
Oh, nice. Yeah, but now when you go visit home, you can fire a tournament or two.
There you go. There you go. I used to go to the old Seminole across the street. Have you ever been in that building?
No.
There's like an old Seminole casino like across the street from the big Hard Rock Resort.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like a, it looks like a
card room?
Yeah, it's a card room. That's okay. All it is. But I used to play tournaments in there when I was 19 years old. Are there any poker rules that should be altered or eliminated?
That's an interesting question because I actually was in a satellite at the Hard Rock.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a satellite into the main, so it was like a $550 buy-in. And I had 8 blinds in the small, plus one opened, folds to me. I looked down at pocket sevens, all in. Oh, so that's okay. That's what they're talking about. Okay. Yeah, so all in.
You move all in, obviously. 8 big blinds.
BB folds. Opener snap calls me. I table my hand, and all of a sudden, I have 3 cards. And I was in total shock.
Wow.
I didn't know what to do. So the floor was called over, and my hand was real dead, and I was out of the satellite.
Whoa.
That rule needs to be changed.
Whoa, that is a... Listen, that is one of those letter of the law... Everything is black and white, TD decisions that I hate. We have a lot of really good, smart tournament directors, and I wish they would use their judgment when there's a gray situation like this. Technically, TDA says you're supposed to be out, but man, on what planet are you doing that maliciously?
Right, like when I have 0 fold equity.
You have no fold equity. You know you have to table your hand. I mean, if you...
I agree. Julio, I agree, and that's why I think...
Sorry, I'm processing this for the first time. You've dwelled on this for a while, I'm sure, but...
No, actually, I forgot about it until you asked. Now I'm tilted.
Well, how did it go over? Was there some screaming? I mean, did you flip the table?
I reminded myself I was in a $550 satellite. I thanked God that I wasn't in the main, and I walked away.
That is such a level-headed... and mature response to something I would never do. I wouldn't care if it was a dollar satellite online. It's the principal, and I'm flipping this table over.
I really, for like 2 seconds, I thought that, but, you know, the rules are the rules, and there's really not much you can do.
What happened?
I asked for I asked for two rulings.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I just accepted it. I asked for two rulings, and they said that.
Were they like, oh, Kelly. Oh, Kelly, we're so sorry.
They don't care about me as much as you think. They're like, sucks for you.
They're like, please exit the tournament area, ma'am.
They're like, ma'am, if you don't leave for the next 5 seconds, we're going to call security.
What happened? Did the card, like, just get stuck?
I guess it was stuck. They said that
some
because of the humidity that sometimes that happens. They said they have to wash the card so that avoids happening. I said I
so
literally
it's a
looked
known
at
problem
my...
and they still wouldn't.
Yeah. They said, because you could have been angling. I said, you're right.
But here's the problem. It's because some asshole actually did pull off that move as an angle, and then they had to make the rule. So somebody ruins it for all the rest of us. That's the way it works.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah. You're allowed to say fuck. It's okay.
Okay.
This is a card player. We mark it not safe for work. It's gambling.
I wish you would have told me earlier. This whole interview would have gone an entirely different direction I known.
We still got a couple minutes left, okay. So it could get R-rated, I guess. Headphones on at the table? Yes or no?
This is a great question, Julio, because I'm
is
very
it?
Torn. I like listening to music, but I also like interacting with the table.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see people smiling when they're playing with me and having a good time, especially when they're giving me chips and smiling. That's my favorite.
Yes.
So I do like headphones, but I try to engage with the players as much as possible.
Yeah. What about like cash versus tournaments?
Cash, 100% my headphones are in, unless mm-hmm. unless there's, you know, a character
entertaining.
At this, yeah. if someone eggs me on, I'll play.
Yeah. So what are you listening to when playing poker? When you do have them on, is this, you got like some kind of pump up mix going or classical music or?
So I used to listen to rap when mm-hmm. I played, and now I've changed to like a lot more mellow music.
Is this a strategic?
Try to tame myself.
Oh, okay.
You know, I used to like cold 4-bet Jack 5 offsuit from the small blind. I don't do shit like that anymore.
And that was whose fault?
That was my fault.
Well, I was just like, who were you listening to then? That made you do that?
I don't know. Someone crazy.
Some rapper.
Some crazy rapper.
So what are you listening to now? Like,
Tom Misch is my favorite. And anyone who's listening to this who hasn't heard him, Google him.
Misch?
Yeah, M-I-S-C-H.
Okay, what kind of music is this?
I don't know. He's got his own, like, genre.
Okay, but it's easy listening?
It's just...
That's a terrible way to describe
cool,
music.
Like, it's just cool guy music. That's
cool
what
guy
is.
Music. That's a genre, right? Who's the leading cool guy music singer out there right now?
I just told you him.
He's at the top of his genre?
He's the guy.
Oh, man.
Like, so, you know how, wait, what's his name? James Brown is the king of funk or whatever.
Yeah. You could have said Michael Jackson and king of pop.
You're right, but that was too easy.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted something a little more discreet.
James Brown is the king of soul.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Or funk would be, what's his name? With all the crazy...
George
Clinton?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
That was a terrible, terrible... I don't know why I said that even, but I was thinking the same thing you were thinking. I saw you. I saw you.
Yeah, you read my mind. Good read.
I get that a lot.
Prop betting. Have you ever engaged in any...
Yeah,
in
actually.
Any enjoyable prop bets?
I've done some prop bets. Nothing too crazy like these kids these days.
Yeah.
But I did...
The
youths.
Yeah.
I did a prop bet with Lily, actually, on Poker Night in America. And we arm wrestled for $1,000.
What? She's a tiny woman. Please
tell
me you
destroyed
her.
She's tiny, but she's fierce.
I mean...
And you'll have to watch the episode to find out who won.
Oh, this hasn't aired yet?
I don't know.
Or it hasn't aired?
I'm sure you can find it
online. I'm just behind the times.
It's the Poker Night in America ladies night at Hard
Rock. Okay. You and Lily... $2,000 on the line.
We battled it out. $1,000.
Oh, $500 each. Okay. For arm wrestling.
Yeah.
You both right-handed?
Nope. I'm left and she's right.
How did that work then?
You gotta watch it to find out.
How is that fair?
Watch it and find out. It was a great episode. There was a lot
she's
of
she's so small. I really want to guess that you won, but I've also seen her rock some like 14-inch heels, so I know she's got like muscle. You know what I mean? You need
your
some coordination.
Your logic is very entertaining,
yeah.
Julio.
I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
All right, we end the podcast the same way every time with a question from the random question generator.
Let's do it.
All right, you might have a unique perspective on this, being a former lawyer. What is a year of life worth? And then the follow-up is, what about a day?
You've stumped me. You've completely stumped
Isn't there an answer, like a legal answer to this?
Well, I don't know what you mean by worth. Are you talking about monetarily?
That's where my head jumped to. Maybe that's my bias on the question. You're right. It doesn't say in dollars, so you can give a different answer if you don't want to give a...
Like if you were facing prison time.
Okay. A year of your life.
Yeah, like...
How much would you pay to get out of a year in prison?
Right. Me personally?
Yeah, sure. Well, this is a podcast about you. I'd like your opinion.
I'd probably pay all the money that I have.
All of it?
I mean, if I had to choose between that and a year in jail, yeah.
Okay. Would you...
A day? I'd just eat it and spend the day in jail.
Even if it was only $20 to get out?
Yeah, for the experience. I get a little street cred.
There's no answer for one day. You're just like, I just want to experience jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that answers the last question. Have you ever been to jail?
I have not.
Yeah.
I have not been to jail.
What's a year of life worth? All right. Let's say we'll reverse the question. Not jail. Now I'm going to shave a year off of your life.
Whatever, I'll pay for that.
Whatever.
See ya.
Whatever
I'm
you were,
to the next level.
Whatever you are going to be, I'm going to trim a year off that. You won't know it's coming still, but whatever it is, minus a year.
Trim the ends, baby. Trim them off.
Yeah, the ends are split.
Yeah, yeah.
How much would you need to receive to accept the terms of that? How much is that year worth to you?
Nothing.
$1 million.
$1 million to get 1 year of the worst year of my life? The worst?
You know what? I didn't think about that. You're right. This is going to be
go.
The worst part of
I'll take the
your
year
life.
Less. I'll take the year less. I'm fine with it.
All right. Well, you could have made some money on it, but that's your choice.
What's money matter to you the last year of your life?
That's true.
Doesn't matter.
And screw all your relatives looking for inheritance.
Relatives? Where are they at?
Oh, it's going to happen. There you go. You ready to wrap this up?
I'm ready.
Perfect. Kelly, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's the show. Thank you once again to Kelly for taking the time out for the podcast and for playing host during the recording in that ridiculous Aria penthouse suite. You can follow her on Twitter at the illest. That's the_ILLEST. If you are listening to this show on the Card Player website or on YouTube, then be sure to find Poker Stories on your favorite podcast app and hit the subscribe button for a new episode every other Sunday night. Leave a rating and a review and let us know about it with an email to pokerstories@cardplayer.com and you'll get a free digital subscription to Card Player Magazine. Thanks for listening.